You know, for as long as I can remember, people have been asking me what I want to be when I get older. I guess technically I'm older now, but what's the next step? If you're entering that transition phase in your life, graduating college, going to grad school, or even just moving to a new city, we've got something for you.
All right, welcome to the brand new show, Transitions. I'm John Mim, and this is my co-host, Callie McCurdy. Together, we'll guide you from show to show and introduce you to Philadelphia's most inspiring entrepreneurs, musicians, comedians, and more.
There's nothing better than experience itself, and we'll be featuring guests on Transitions that are, to be honest, walking in shoes not so different from yours. Now that you've got a feel for the show, meet the rest of the folks behind Transitions.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the April 21st edition of Transitions Radio. Let's get a round of applause.
I am so excited for so many reasons.
Why is that, Kelly?
Well, first of all, I have a half day tomorrow. This is a big deal. When you get out of college, you praise these things. I've done it too. It's a really big deal for me.
Half day. Explain that concept to me.
Easter. Yeah, somebody out there cares. I mean, I care, but my boss cares, which is a good thing. And so that's going on. And then
some
Easter.
Of us don't have a half day. So thank
I'm
you.
I'm sorry to rain on your parade there.
Rubbing it in.
But I have one, so good. Rest assured.
Kelly, what awesome things do we have tonight on the one and the only podcast run out of a borders in North Wales, Pennsylvania?
We have a great lineup of guests tonight. We have Alyssa Lewin coming on from an organization called Nancy's House, which actually provides essentially care for caregivers.
Absolutely.
So we have her coming on. And Janine is talking with college seniors Ariel Frischa and Maddie Iacobucci about their plans after graduation. Been there.
Done that.
I'm interested to see, you know.
And now you host a podcast out of a borders.
I do. And I live in a cardboard box in the street.
You live in a van down by the river. Dan has some great segments lined up, too, talking about sports and current events, as always, which we can look forward to. And what else we got, Kelly?
And I am talking about the annoying, at least in my opinion, coverage of the royal wedding. So, I mean, that to me has to go. But we're going to be talking about that in relationships, dating, and complaining. And it looks like it's going to be another segment of complaining, at least on my end. And then, of course, be sure to check out, I just started a new blog. It's www.thezish.blogspot.com, where I talk about everything that we talked about during the show, any behind-the-scenes stuff, and then I'll also give updates throughout the week of what's coming up on the show. So be sure to check that out.
And there's even bigger news on the horizon here.
Oh,
excited to be featured in this spring's edition of the Cabrini College's magazine. And you can check that out online at cabrini.edu. And I've had lots of friends on Facebook say, "Why are you in my school's magazine?" I thought I got rid of you a long time ago, and that's just not the story.
And we are coming up on our year anniversary, so we have a little bit of an unveiling to do tonight. We have a surprise for everyone. But be sure to check us out on our website, www.transitionsradio.com.
Check us out on facebook.com/transitionsradio. And where can they check us out on Twitter?
The Twitter at @transitionsr. And listen to us every Friday from 4 to 5 on 89.1 The Burn out of Radnor, Pennsylvania.
Absolutely. Without any further ado, let's kick it off to our executive producer and lights up correspondent, all around jack of all trades lady.
Janine, Miss Janine.
Yeah, Miss Janine. Take it away, Janine.
Hi, everyone. I'm Janine Gibbons, your arts and entertainment contributor for Transitions. And tonight on Anne Lights Up, I have two Cabrini students with me who are on the verge of becoming Cabrini alumni, which is so exciting. Can we just give it up for a second? Ariel Frischa and Maddie Iacobucci, who will be graduating this May, 2011. So that's only the beginning of it, though. These two women have a lot going on in the arts and entertainment scene. They are both part of Cabrini Theater's spring musical, Merrily We Roll Along by Stephen Sondheim, which I don't think a lot of people know it's by him, so I wanted to put that in there. It's not up on our website, but, you know, the same guy who did Sweeney Todd did this musical, which is kind of hard to believe once we get further into that. But we're also going to be discussing their post-graduation plans. And these girls have a plan, which is more than I could have said when I graduated. I thought I was going to move to California, the works, become famous. But I am famous now in Russia and on transition, so it's fine. But Ariel F. just got a job. I'm sorry, Ariel Frischa, I call her Ariel F. Got a job at CBS as a production assistant, which is awesome. And Maddie is going to be going to Villanova mm-hmm. to study theater, which if you've ever seen her on the stage is a great choice because I know she'll make it. And I want her to say that she knew me before on the True Hollywood Story someday. So without any further ado, I'm just going to go right into it and start asking you about like your post-graduation thing, because I'm really interested in how you guys, you know, figured out what your next step would be. So whichever one of you wants to go first and just introduce yourselves.
Maddie, take it away. All you first.
Okay. Introduce myself. Oh, hi world. I'm Maddie Iacobucci, along with Ariel Frischa. We are both senior communications majors, and I'm going to be graduating in 25 days, not that I'm counting. And this August, I will be going to, like Janine said, Villanova University in Villanova, Pennsylvania, to get my Master's of Arts in theater. So I'm very excited. I can't wait to do it. It's going to be, I know it's going to be a ton of hard work, but I'm very excited.
And how did you come to, like, decide Villanova? Were you always thinking Villanova or?
Well, I knew I wanted to go somewhere close because my family is really important to me, and I'm also an equestrian, so it was really important that I still stay close to the things that I love. And Villanova has an absolutely great reputation in the Philadelphia theater scene, and it's always been my goal to be an actor, so working actress in Philadelphia, so Villanova seemed like the obvious choice.
Awesome. And Ariel F.?
So I am going to be working at CBS 3, Eyewitness News in Philadelphia, and I interned with them in the fall, and in March, mid-March, they happened to call me and say, there's a job opening, we really want you to consider applying for it, and I said, okay, why not, you know, it's a possibility, and so I went in for an interview, and about a week later, they said, we'd really like to hire you for this position. And I started maybe 3 or 4 weeks ago, and I actually work today. So,
wow.
So, yeah.
How do you like it so far?
I love it. It's great. News is a very fast business, but it's a very interesting business. And it's very interesting to find out how they find the news and what makes news news, you know, and how it's not just any old thing, you know. So it's a lot of fun. I love it.
Oh, that's awesome. Well, congrats to you both for, you know, being ahead of the game and doing so well with it. I'm really proud of you. It's crazy because, well, I remember RLF was a freshman when I was junior, I guess, and it's just crazy that you're graduating now. It makes me feel really old. But anyhow, moving on, actually transitioning back, let's talk about this play that you were both in, because it was all about transitions. I went to the show and I was like, oh my goodness, I have to talk about this, and I had no idea what it was about. So if one of you just wanted to give a real quick synopsis and say like what you did for the production.
Sure. Well, Merrily We Roll Along is a story that's told backwards through Franklin Shepard, who it becomes like this big producer, movie kind of guy, who kind of, I guess you would say, in my point of view, I thought of it as he loses his focus on his dream and he loses sight of what's important to him and gets wrapped up in more material things than the lasting things like friendship and stuff. And I was backstage working with the props. And for those of you that did see the show, it's very big props, pianos, trunks, crates. I mean, it's insane. And if you know our theater, it's not the biggest theater in the world, but we make do of it, so. But Maddie might be able to give a better synopsis than myself.
That was good. I liked it.
Well, right. Ariel touched on what makes Merrily so unique is that it is told backwards. And there is, you know, there is an unhappy ending. You're not going to walk out of that theater feeling good about yourself. the thing that's so great, what Sondheim and George Firth have kind of done is they've taken a musical that makes you kind of reexamine where you are in your life. And it makes you reevaluate what your dreams are, who the people you choose to surround yourself with are and how they're able to influence you. And it kind of makes you realize, you know, what is my dream? What's my goal? And how do I go after it?
Mm-hmm. That's perfect. And what character did you play real quick?
Oh, I played a very nasty person named Gussie Carnegie. And she basically is one of the primary forces that Frank's life kind of starts to fall apart. She seduces him and he cheats on his wife with her. And she's just a very, very nasty woman. But it was very fun to play because I'm not nasty. So it was fun.
Yeah. Not at all. No. Yeah. Maddie like is polar opposite of the character you play, which I love.
Fun, Maddie is completely opposite. It was so funny seeing her transform into Gussie because you're just like, Maddie? And she was just like, hey. And then she would like be like, I'm Gussie. Like it was nuts. Like,
got to take my aggression out.
Yeah. Day. But it just shows how good of an actress Maddie is.
Thank absolutely. Oh, look at that. I love it. All right. Well, my last question, what I'm going to wrap it up on, is what do you think is the most important lesson that you carry with you from college or any major transition that you went through in your life or that you take away from college?
The most important message I take away
from
lesson. I guess the most important lesson is, for me, I came to college knowing that I wanted to do something in communication. I didn't really have any motivation in high school, but I had a lot of motivation here. And I guess being at Cabrini really showed me that you could do whatever you want. You just got to put your mind to it and put the dedication into it to get to where you want to be. And that's definitely what I learned most from it. So
good. Maddie?
Well, I think you go to college and you really figure out what you want to do with your life, and that plan may change. I started as a French major. Well, that went a little differently.
Wow.
Yes. Really? I was a French major. So
I can see that.
I think you go to college and you go in one way and you come out another, and hopefully you come out a better person and you come out knowing a lot more about who you are and what you want. And, you know, you find out the things that you like and the things that you don't like and what you want to do with your life.
All very true. Mm-hmm. I mean, definitely everything you said, and it's all transitions and I love it. I want to thank you guys.
I'm so sorry.
It's fine. I want to thank you guys so much for being on. That was Ariel Frischa and Maddie Yakabuchi, and I'm Janine Gibbons, your arts and entertainment contributor. Kill the lights. Back to you, John and Callie.
Thanks, Janine, and thanks to Ariel and Maddie. That was a great interview. I remember when I went into college, I wanted to be a television personality, and I interned with one in New York City, which just completely shifted my gears into radio.
So, who'd you intern with?
Wendy Diamond.
Are you allowed to say that?
Yeah, she's on a couple episodes of Real Housewives.
Didn't you sign like a non-disclosure?
I did not. All the other interns I worked with did.
So you can say whatever you
want.
Well,
I can say that I worked with her. I won't share the stories. Not on the air.
Yeah. Because you can get you for slander.
Who knows? But I actually ended up leaving there at my university's request and went to CBS Radio. So go CBS.
It's interesting. I live right down the street from CBS in Philadelphia, too. So it's a small world.
All right. Now we're going to kick it to Dan, who's talking about all the playoffs going on this week with the Sixers and the Flyers. Not really into hockey myself. Basketball, I love. And, of course, our beloved Phillies and what is going on with their offense, which I'm interested to hear because, you know, I think they've been having a great season so far, but I guess Dan disagrees. And I'm always interested in Dan's tips about sports. So, Dan?
All right, welcome back to another edition of the Three-Pointer. Dan Schmidt joined by always as the coach, Dave Bennett.
How we doing?
Today we're going to go in-depth into all three sports going on right now. We're going to talk about the Flyers' Game 4 loss to the Buffalo Sabres. Another 1-0 loss. We'll also mention the referee with the effeminate French name who called the major penalty. We're going to talk about the Sixers and their game against the Heat that they have tonight, actually. And then we'll talk a little about the Phillies and how the offense seems to have gone south in the early going here. But let's break down the Flyers. 1-0 loss to the Buffalo Sabres. Evens things up at 2 games apiece. But to be perfectly honest with you, I don't even feel like this game was really a loss. I mean, looking at the scoreboard is really the only way that you can look at this game as the loss, because they outplayed Buffalo for pretty much the last, I would say, 45 minutes of the game.
Yeah, the Buffalo Sabres came out flying. You know, they were on top of the Flyers the whole first period almost. Really not letting them get out of their own zone, making them play in the neutral zone with it, really not having any time on attack at all. But the long and the short of it is the Flyers absolutely outplayed them. They outshot them. They out-hit them. I believe they won the face-off matchup, especially playing with short lines with Jeff Carter's knee injury going down. You know, I feel they really did outplay him in the long run. Unfortunately, the scoreboard says otherwise, and, you know, the refs had something to say about it as well.
Yeah, Ryan Miller turned in probably the best performance by a goaltender in the playoffs so far. I mean, he was just incredible. The Flyers had the chances. They were there. Against a lesser goalie, that's a 5-1 Flyers win. And when Miller was down and out, you know, they got the pucks hopping over Richard's stick. Briere, all alone in front, just makes one move too many, and Miller snatches it up with the glove.
JVR hit two posts.
Van Riemsdyk, I mean, you could just go down the list of Flyers who should have scored. I mean, there was that one play in the first period where Van Riemsdyk has the open net just staring at him, and the Buffalo defenseman dives and gets the thin shaft of his stick on the puck. In situations like that, you basically just have to look at it and say they were unlucky. And in games like that, you're better off being lucky than good.
Absolutely. And unfortunately, the Flyers...
The Buffalo Sabres were not good in that game. They did not play well at all.
No, in the beginning they did. Like we just said, they came out on top, you know, in the first period. But other than that, it was pretty much all Flyers all the way. Pounding them in the boards and keeping it deep and playing well.
And I really thought the Flyers were... They took control in the second period, and they were looking to dominate in the third until the play that happened 2 seconds before the end of the period, where Buffalo Sabres forward Patrick Coletta, who is known around the league as a guy who's not exactly looking to put the puck in the net, he's looking more to, you know, get under your skin and agitate you. Coming in for a hit of Mike Richards against the boards, Mike Richards puts his elbow up in an act of self-defense. Now, you can't elbow a guy in the face. That's a penalty.
Absolutely.
Give him the 2-minute penalty. This ref goes totally over the top, gives him a 5-minute major penalty, and even the Buffalo Sabres players were going, yeah,
thanks,
we'll take it, but...
Absolutely.
I am yet to hear any analyst, whether it's on the Buffalo side or the Philadelphia side, whether they're a national guy, a local guy, a regional guy, I am yet to hear anyone say, oh, that was the correct call. Not one person. And the fact that we have not seen a suspension from Mike Richards, which usually, if you are given a 5-minute major penalty for an elbow to the head, you suspect the suspension's coming. Mm-hmm. No suspension coming means to tell me that the NHL even thinks that this ref made a mistake.
And he has a history of it, you know, looking into a little bit. He's called a couple games where any type of elbow near the head, no matter what it looks like, he's giving you the 5.
But let's keep in mind here that this is a rookie referee in his first year in the NHL.
Absolutely. And this year alone, he's made 3 or 4 of those calls, so you can imagine.
It almost looks to me like the guy's trying, not so much to call the game down the middle, but the guy's trying to make a point like, this is not going to be tolerated under my watch.
Yeah.
Which, you can say what you want about that, but that's the ref putting himself in the spotlight. If you're a referee, your goal should be to go unnoticed for the game.
Yeah.
Like, if you're a referee, you don't want people knowing your name.
Get out
like,
of
this
the
guy,
way.
This guy, Francois St. Laurent, like, this is going to be a name that's going to be remembered for a while, and if you're an NHL official, that's a bad thing. Game 5, Friday night, Chris Pronger, based on the reports that we're hearing from practice, it looks like he's going to try to play. Anything can happen in the next 24 hours, but I would put good money that Chris Pronger will be in the lineup for Game 5, and I think that's a tremendous boost for the Flyers, who are already ticked off that they lost the game that they dominated.
They're mad. They're mad. They're going to come out firing in the first
game. I think the Flyers are going to come out, and I think they're going to whip Buffalo in Game 5 here. I think this is over in 6. I think the Flyers are going to totally knock Buffalo around with a dominating win on Friday, and I think they're going to come out and win a tight game on Easter Sunday and move on to the second round. One team that's not going to be advancing to the second round of the playoffs this weekend is the 76ers.
No.
Now, 76ers exceeded expectations on pretty much every level this year. They won 41 games when most people were expecting them to win maybe half that. So you really got to give it up to Doug Collins, but going up against the Miami Heat, they're just outmatched.
They don't have the manpower for it. They don't have the big-time stars. You know, NBA is a very star-driven league. You haven't seen a bunch of no-names really win a title ever. It's always the big-name guys that pull it off, and we don't have those. And that's just the fact of the matter. They don't have the low-post play that Chris Bosh brings to the table. They have better point guard play than the Heat, but that's about as far as you can take anything.
They can't score with the Heat to keep up with them.
Absolutely
not. They just absolutely cannot. You look at why these teams get the stars. It's because there's going to become a time in crunch crunch time in the fourth quarter when you are going to find your hot hand and you're going to be like, win this game for us. And the Heat have numerous options for which to do that. Well, the Sixers really don't have any. Like, if you're down 5, 6, 7, 8 points in the fourth quarter, who are you giving the ball to on the 76ers to say, we need you to make some clutch shots here? Lou Williams? If Lou Williams is the guy that you're putting up against LeBron James and Dwayne Wade and saying, hey, match these guys in crunch time, you're not going to win a game.
No.
You're not going to win a game.
They don't have it, and it's not going to happen. Very gallant effort by all parties involved, all the players.
Kept it close in game one. You got to give them credit. They held it. They held their own in game one.
They were leading. They fell apart towards the end. You know, that's going to happen. But game two showed what's actually going to happen in the series. So I think they'll get, in my mind, swept. They might pull one out, lose four.
I think if they're going to win a game, it's going to be tonight's game, game three. A sellout crowd at the Wachovia Center, which was something they were not sure about, but the game is going to be sold out. Crowd that they should be into it as long as the Sixers are close. And this might be the game that Miami kind of sleepwalks through. You know, they've had a couple days off, they've been in the city, maybe they're going out having a good time thinking they've already got this locked up. And I mean, it's sad to say that the hopes of the Sixers winning a game might rest upon Miami not taking it seriously, but really that's the way you got to look at it. I mean, Miami, there's no way the Sixers are going to win the series, and there's no way that they're going to win more than one game.
I agree.
Alright, well, let's move on to the boys of summer, the Phillies, who, after a ridiculously hot start, the offense has kind of gone away, and this was something that we worried about in the beginning of the year, before the start of the year, I should say, that they kind of were able to hide in the early going because they were getting clutch hits, they were getting great pitching performances, but a couple of trends have developed, at least in this first month of the season, that do warrant attention. The lack of home runs. Now, we knew there was going to be a drop-off in home runs, but we didn't think that it would be so drastic as to that the Phillies would go from a top-5 hitting home run team in this league to a bottom-5 home run hitting team in this league. Other categories on offense that the Phillies are ranking near the bottom in: walks, pitches per plate appearance, extra base hits. Now, they were winning a lot of games in the early going because they were able to string singles together and keep rallies going, but asking them to string singles together to score runs, that's not going to be an effective way to score.
No, you need multiple base hits, whether, you know, doubles, triples, dingers, doesn't matter. You got to put the ball out a little bit further than what they're doing and blooping it. The hitting's become very inconsistent. Wilson Valdez is starting to show his hitting prowess as a joke.
Or lack thereof.
Yeah, exactly. You're looking at him, you're looking at, you know, Chooch, he goes through his little slumps. Ryan Howard's not hitting that great. You know, as a team, they're just really not coming around. And granted, we're not even 20 full games in yet, but again, these are things you're going to have to look at. It kind of gives you a sample of what the rest of the year is going to look like, and we're going to have our ups and downs.
Now, they are going to get Chase Utley back at some point. His knee was a huge concern going into spring training, but he has been making progress, it seems, almost every day. A couple weeks ago, could not even jog lightly on the knee, whereas to this week, he's actually sprinting in the infield. So if he keeps progressing at that rate, you would have to expect to get him back at the All-Star break, and that'll help solidify the offense a little bit, just because you're adding in another guy who takes a lot of pitches, works the count, you know, not afraid to just take a walk and leave it up to the next guy, which is something they really don't have on the team. This team just hacks.
No, they're swingers, and that's something, again, comes from Charlie Manuel and the team he's put together for the most part. You know, other pieces were here before, but that's his mentality. He's a hitting coach at heart. He loves swingers, and that's what they do.
But I think the biggest issue with the Phillies going forward is going to be the corner outfield spots, because at this point, Ben Francisco and Raul Ibanez do not look like they're everyday players. Raul Ibanez especially. It seems like anyone who can get the fastball up there, 93, 94 miles an hour, they can just blow it right by Ibanez. He can't catch up to it anymore. His swing is so slow. It's
a sweeping swing. It's not even a swing in general. It's just kind of hoping the bat gets through the zone in time to make some connection.
And we're not even getting into the fact that Francisco and Ibanez are both, can't even really call them below average outfielders at this point. They are bad outfielders.
Ben Francisco, I would have to disagree. He's, you know, mediocre, average, everyday.
Right, I'll give you Ben Francisco being average, but Raul Ibanez is terrible.
No, Raul Ibanez
is a flat-out liability.
38, 39 years old, bad knees, bad body, he's falling apart. He's
can't
been
run,
booting
can't
balls.
Throw.
I mean, you know, he's not an everyday starter. He's more of a DH guy for an American League team. Unfortunately, we're not in that league, so we're stuck.
Yeah. I even think at this point that he's not an everyday player. He can only be a part-time player. And here would be my one solution, should the Phillies choose to go this route. I think that on their faces, Raul Ibanez and Ben Francisco are not everyday players. But I think if you combine them into a platoon, playing Ben Francisco against the left-handed pitchers and hard-throwing righties, and Raul Ibanez taking on most of the right-handed pitching, I think you can combine those two in over 162 games, you will get a productive outfielder. But you also now have one spot open. So who's playing right field? I think this is finally a time where they say, Dominic Brown, here you go, kid. We've been saving you for all these years. You're the only prospect we refuse to trade in any of the Halladay, Cliff Lee, Roy Oswalt trades that they made. I think it's time to put the kid out there and see what he's got.
I don't disagree with that. What worries me is he had some time last year. He did start some games consistently in a row and really showed that he can't hit a breaking ball. He just can't read it. You know, he's swinging real late or real early. He's looking fastball every time. We all know that. And it's something that he's really going to have to get used to up in the big leagues.
And I think time will tell with that. Mm-hmm. But I think at this point in the stage of Dominic Brown's career, it's time for him to start playing every day against Major League Pitching. You got to see what this kid's got. Like, you've got a hole in your lineup now. And you've got a guy who you've been counting on to fill holes in your lineup. It's time to put these two together and see what the kid's got.
Absolutely, and I think it'll happen. It's just a matter of time. He's still rehabbing a little bit down in AAA ball to get his hand back right.
So we'll see. Like we said, a little too early to panic about the Phillies. If you want to panic, you got the Flyers and the Sixers, so go right ahead. All right, well, that's all the time we got for this week. I want to thank the coach, as always,
giving us the insight here.
Now, be sure to check out the three-pointer blog at transitionsradio.com for a more in-depth look at the Phillies' offensive struggles, as well as the bullpen struggles so far, which is a topic we'll get into next week. I'm Dan Schmidt for the coach, Dave Bennett. We're going to throw it back to John and Callie.
Thanks, Dan. Be sure to check out his blog and Janine's blog on our website at www.transitionsradio.com.
Of course, you get a lot more on facebook.com/transitionsradio.
We do, and P.S., by the way, I uploaded the hideous peacock picture from last week that I talked about, the artwork. That is on our Facebook page.
It's on Facebook.
Right, and you can also find us on the Twitter at TransitionsR.
Be sure to listen to us every Friday from 4 to 5 p.m. on WYBF 89.1 FM, The Burn, Radnor, Pennsylvania.
Tonight, we are talking with Alyssa Lewin from Nancy's House. Hi, Alyssa.
Hi, Kelly. Hi, John.
Thanks for coming on. I heard you got lost on the way here.
Just a little, but it came out okay.
I did get a call as I was speeding here myself because my train was late. But what we are talking about is Nancy's House tonight, which is a nonprofit organization, and it's dedicated to providing comprehensive respite for family caregivers. So what I am going to ask you, Alyssa, is to explain what respite is for people who don't know. I wasn't actually familiar with it. I know about caregiving, but I'd never heard the term respite before.
Respite is usually used when you talk to caregivers. It's usually used in the sense of somebody coming in to take care of the person who's ill so that the caregiver can go out and do whatever it is they need to do. The definition of it is it's a break or a vacation or a rest. But usually that's not what it is, and that's part of what makes Nancy's House different. Usually respite is about somebody coming in, taking care of the ill person, and the caregiver, rather than taking a rest, goes out and tries to hold her life together. It's about a 60-40 split women to men in terms of caregiving. But what we do is we actually provide a break for the caregiver. So the caregiver comes to us. She or he gets two nights of sleep, which is amazingly critical if you are a caregiver. And then around that two nights, we also build all the meals, the massage, training and stress management techniques that you can apply, like in the moment, yoga, meditation, so that you actually have some tools in your back pocket when you go back home, ways to relax and manage the stress better. So the respite that we provide is actually a complete break from the daily caregiving. It's about a 45-hour session.
Wow.
Nancy, what are some of the emotional and physical aspects of caregiving that require the services of Nancy's House, and maybe other approaches to it as well? I wouldn't imagine that it would be something that would be that overbearing, but I guess it can be.
It's pretty interesting when you start to look at the research about what happens to you as a caregiver. when I was starting Nancy's House and just at the research phase of it, one of the studies that actually kind of smacked me in the face was a study that came out of University of California, San Francisco Medical School. And they looked at telomeres. They're the little caps at the end of chromosome bundles. And, you know, it's what keeps your chromosomes from unraveling.
Pretty important, I imagine.
Yeah, yeah. They're useful. And as you age, as a cell reproduces, those caps get a little shorter each and every time. And in this study, what they took were healthy moms in their 30s with healthy kids and healthy moms in their 30s with chronically ill kids, and they compared the telomeres in their cells. So these are not people who are sick. These are not people who are feeling like this is a burden. They're taking care of their children. And what they found is that the moms of the chronically ill kids, at a biological level, their cells were 10 years older than their same-age counterparts.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, so even when you're doing this out of love and devotion and it's what you really want to do, just the fact of being so stressed and so exhausted all the time, it's really a huge impact on your body.
I think a lot of times, and I know at least for me, when I hear caregiver, I think of a designated organization that people sign up to work as a caregiver. They work for an organization. Mm-hmm. But obviously, it's a lot more than that. It's family based. It's peer based. Give us some examples of caregivers that you know we would encounter in daily life that maybe people wouldn't even think about.
Well, I think your point, Callie, is a good one in that most caregivers are invisible. Just to give you a little background, there are over 55 million family caregivers in the United States today, and they save the United States taxpayer over $350 billion with a B. dollars annually in healthcare services. So it's a huge service they provide. But like you said, that's not who you think about when you're thinking of a caregiver. So a caregiver could be, like in this study, these moms who have chronically ill kids, they're family caregivers. It could be a woman whose husband just came back from Iraq with a traumatic brain injury or an amputation. You know, a lot of the soldiers who are returning have these horrible injuries, and their wives are left to take care of them. So they are caregivers. It could be people who are in the sandwich generation who have young children and aging parents at the same time and are taking care of both their kids and their elderly parents. And that was the situation I had when I started this.
Alyssa, tell us the story of Nancy's House, how it came to fruition, and how it grew.
Well, Nancy's House actually started from my own story as a caregiver. When my father-in-law was 90, it was pretty evident that he could no longer live by himself. It just wasn't safe. He had Parkinson's, he had diabetes, he had heart disease, he had, you know, all those little things. He had a number of cancers, so things that needed to be medically controlled, and he just couldn't manage it anymore. So he came to live with us, and I would be, you know, walking my dog, and people would come up and say, you know, well, how's Abe doing? It's like, well, he's fine. And inside, I would be saying, I'm not fine, you know, and I would be, like, ready to jump out of my skin. So one of the things that I did for myself, for my own well-being, was that I started to see a massage therapist named Nancy Brown, and Nancy had a son with autism. And it was a conversation we had one day about, wouldn't it be really nice if there were a place we could go to get taken care of the way we take care of these other people? Mm-hmm. That kind of planted the seed for what would become Nancy's House. Nancy left the practice that I used. I have no idea where she went. Try Googling Nancy Brown. You know, it's like you get a lot. And my father-in-law did live for another 5 years. But what happened toward the end of his life, a couple of things. One is, as his care became more involved, we started to hire the professional caregivers, Callie, you were talking about. And I realized that I still was not sleeping at night because he would get up and rummage around. His night and day were switched, and I would wake up. I would hear him, and I would just wait for that thud that would tell me he had fallen. And then, of course, it would be go downstairs, see if he's hurt, call 911, you know, and that was kind of how our nights went. Needless to say, I was pretty exhausted. When he died, the day after he died, and he died at home with hospice, it was all as good as it could possibly be. The next day, though, I woke up and realized I had just had the first solid night's sleep I had had in 5 years. And it sort of came together that that experience and that earlier conversation with Nancy, now I had the time to make this happen and to create this place for caregivers. So I started doing the research and seeing what was available. And despite the fact that all of the research says, you know, caregivers need these particular elements that we include in our program, there was nobody providing that in a comprehensive way that was easily affordable.
To prevent that sort of emotional, physical, and even interpersonal burnout that can happen, obviously, mm-hmm. as evidenced by your story, and thank you for sharing as well, what makes Nancy's House different from, let's say, just taking some time away?
The biggest difference is that if you take time away, yes, you get a break, but you're going to go back to the same thing you just left. If you come to Nancy's House, you're going to go back feeling refreshed, which would be the same either way, but you're also going to go back with a community that's now been built because we run our respite sessions in small groups. 8 to 10 caregivers come at a time. So you now have 7 to 9 other people who know you, know your story, and you have their phone number, their email, their address, so that you can stay in touch and provide the support. One of the guests that we had when we were taking care of ALS caregivers talked about how very helpful she found, you know, the ALS professionals, and they know what they're doing, and they were great, she said, but being with people who really are doing the hands-on every day and know what she is experiencing and hearing what they had to say meant so much more to her. So we build a community that you wouldn't get if you just, you know, went down the shore or took a break. The other thing is that we give you some specific techniques, you know, things that you can do. So when people come to stay with us, they also learn stress management techniques, and I have a whole page of them that people go home with that they can apply in the moment when things are getting a little crazy. Here's something you can do real quick and easy to help bring yourself back down. They have classes in yoga and meditation so that you learn things you can do at home. And we get a lot of feedback from our guests about how even guests who didn't take part in the classes there, you know, it's like, I just couldn't do that with you. Go home and find yoga classes because they discover this is a really useful way that they can take care of themselves.
What would you say when a caregiver comes to Nancy's House, obviously mm-hmm. looking to be cared for, is mm-hmm. the biggest or the hardest thing that they are dealing with? Because one thing that I caught on to, I imagine it must almost feel guilty to admit that you're having a hard time taking care of someone who can't help that they're having a hard time.
Guilt is a big piece, and that does happen a lot. And one of the benefits of being in a community is that when these words fall out of your mouth, everybody else around the table, instead of gasping in horror, looks at you and nods and says, yeah, I feel that way too. And it suddenly normalizes all of these feelings that you've been struggling with. And it makes it much easier to put a frame on them and to understand them and to cope with them.
I feel like that meaning or that sense making goes a far way.
It does.
I think I read an article about mothers who were caring with children with disabilities, and how when they got together, they could share some of this, what they call dark humor about the situation, that mm-hmm. that they felt only that A, they could understand that they were the only ones that could, but also B, that they were the only ones who could dispense it as well. And to feel like you could say that because you had been in the trenches together.
Right.
And it speaks to your inner systems approach as well, of providing not only technical skills, but also, you know, hey, I've been through this too.
Right. You know? And it builds the community. And knowing that you're not alone, breaking that sense of isolation is one of the biggest pieces, I think, that we offer.
Mm-hmm. You have a background in psychology.
I do.
What is your background?
I'm a licensed psychologist. I have a master's degree from Temple. I have postgraduate training from what was then Marriage Council of Philadelphia, is now the Council for Relationships. And I've been in private practice for 25 years.
So definitely know what you're doing when it comes to that.
It's been a while, yes.
Okay, guys, just to give you some background on some of the testimonials that Nancy's House has gotten from people who've been there, and this is from the brochure. This is a quote from a woman named Vicky. I was glad to have had some private time to help me be me again. If I'm me, I'll be better at giving to everyone else.
And Bruce says, it was great to share the experience, gain advice, and to realize I'm not alone in my life situation, which I think speaks volumes to the project that is Nancy's House.
It certainly does. And there are plenty of other ways that you can get in touch with Nancy's House aside from this brochure. I'm going to leave it to Alyssa to tell you guys what's going on, where you can find her, and where you can find her information.
Thanks, Callie. So there are a number of things happening right now. It's a very exciting time. One of them is that we are having a major fundraising event on May 12th that is being held at Freeman's Auction House, 1808 Chestnut Street in Philadelphia. And that's going to be Thursday, May 12th from 6 to 8 o'clock. It's a wine and cheese. Wine is being provided by Barefoot Wine and Bubbly, cheese by Cabot Cheeses. And that's going to be a really fun event. And I'm really glad, John, that you chose to read Bruce's quote, because Bruce is going to be speaking. Bruce takes care of his wife, who has MS, and she is also going to be there. And another guest will be there speaking, Gail, who was one of our first guests and has come back a couple of times. And they're going to talk about how Nancy's House has impacted their lives. We really rely on our fundraisers to allow us to do these sessions. We only charge $50 for the caregivers, and obviously, you know, what I've described is a more than $50 session. So we subsidize the sessions by fundraising, by grants, and by private donations. So this is a big fundraising event. There's a smaller one that's in Glenside on May 4th, Wednesday, May 4th, at Dovetail Artisans in Glenside on Glenside Avenue, 105 Glenside. It's a wonderful little shop that has all kinds of crafts with made by American artists, jewelry, glass, woodwork, all kinds of really beautiful things. And they're going to stay open for us the evening of May 4th from 5:30 to 8. Again, we'll have wine and cheese and other kinds of nibbles. And they will be donating 10 to 15% of all the proceeds for the evening to Nancy's House. So we're really excited about that and very appreciative. We also have a website, www.nancys-house.org. You have to put in the dash or you wind up at an HIV center in Tennessee. So it's N-A-N-C-Y-S, nancys-house.org. You can donate online on our website. You can get information about upcoming events, and you can also find out a lot more about the organization. And finally, we will be having a respite session June 10th to 12th. So I'm excited about that one. It's going to be a new one in that it will be people from all different backgrounds, not a specific disease orientation. So we're excited about that.
And we will have all of that information on our website so that you guys can be sure to get any information you may have missed if you didn't have a pen and paper. Thank you so much for coming on.
It's been my pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you, Alyssa.
All right, so here we go with relationships, dating, and complaining. I'm Callie McCurdy, and this week we're talking about the coverage for the royal wedding. Intro bells. Outro. Okay, that's enough. William and Kate, yippee-ki-yay, are getting married. This is going on in England. I'm sure you know all the facts. I'm not going to sit here and tell everybody what's going on, because if you're watching any channel or listening to anything, you know. So we're here to discuss the media coverage of this couple, people's opinions on it. And I'm just going to kick it off with this article that I have here about NBC basically scaling back their coverage of the wedding because they think the couple is boring. And Americans are not as into it as they thought that they would be. Thoughts?
When do they get married?
They get married next week.
I thought they got married already, because the amount of media coverage where they're like, we're going to be hosting the fashion show and watching this and that. Right. And I was like, didn't y'all get married like 6 months ago?
NBC was supposed to go. They were going to go to England for a week before. They were actually going to be there, I think it was yesterday or today, and broadcast. They were going to do the Today Show from England and everything. And hype, hype, hype. But they canceled their plans because it's not receiving the ratings that they presume they would get. I agree.
Oh, me. Okay. Well, I think it is kind of a big deal because, you know, this is the biggest thing that England has really had since Princess Diana died and since Princess Diana got you know, married to Prince Charles, unfortunately. And am I allowed to say that? Yeah.
Beckham.
This is opinion based.
Beckham. Yeah. But sorry, Beckham.
But you know, I mean, well, Beckham's not that big of a deal. He's too old now. So, but anyway, but you know, I think this is kind of a big deal for them because Kate, in some way, relates to Diana. And I think that's kind of like the angle that they're going for is how much she relates to Diana.
Maddie, do you have anything? I'm sure. Well, I also think this one is a little bit more special because obviously when Princess Di and Charles got married, there was so much hullabaloo over like her virginity, if I can say that. And like, you know, that she was royal. And with Kate, she's just a commoner. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they met at school and it's very romantic. And it makes other girls think like, hey, maybe I can marry a prince. That's why we love it.
On that, you know, that's an interesting point that you make, Maddie. It's a little scary. The one story that I did see is a news correspondent followed around a couple of girls in England who were from America and talked to them about this fantasy of meeting a prince. And basically, the segment gave American girls great locations you could go if you wanted to maybe run into the prince, which Janine looks excited about. I think stalking is immediately what came to mind.
Craigslist killer.
Right. And there is no question as to this being a big deal. This is definitely a big deal. It is a story no matter what, and it's going to be covered. But is the coverage excessive? That is my point here. Which, Janine, you want to comment?
I do. E! News, which I don't know if you can really call it news because it's E, but they have been covering this like nonstop. Like, and I think the interesting thing about the coverage, like when I was looking it up, is what they're covering. Certain things I find very interesting, like Maddie was saying, like the fact that Kate Middleton and Princess Diana kind of have like so much in common, like weird, uncanny things, like their outfits. I was watching a program last night where they were even showing a picture of Kate Middleton, showing a picture of Princess Diana, and like their outfits were similar, which was just a little bit unnerving, but cool. But then there's things like their exes are invited to the wedding and like, you know, details like that, that I guess unless you're really into it, I can see how it could be portrayed as annoying. But I am myself one of those girls who, you know, grew up on Disney movies. And
I saw your eyes light up when I told you they relieved some places where you could go meet princes.
Yeah. I mean, Prince Harry, I don't know. I mean, he's cool. You know, I might take those hints. Just kidding. I'm not a stalker, though. John Mim's looking at me like I'm crazy. Come on. If there was a princess. All right, fine.
One of the things that I think about when it comes to the news, and being a broadcast journalism major, I think that there's two types of people to the news. There's the news director that's going to pull the stories because the public wants it. And then there's also going to be the news director who pulls the stories because it's good for the public to know. I think that this is... it's fluff and it's interesting, but we have tragedies going on in Japan and just other things that I think deserve more attention at this point. And I did read in an article that they had mentioned because of all the tragic stuff that's been going on lately, they tried to sort of bring in the royal wedding as relief, you know, relief from everything that's going on and, you know, terrifying at this moment in time. But I think a little bit of it is over coverage, you know, like letting girls know places where they can meet a prince. I mean, that's a waste of 5 minutes.
I saw a jelly bean with a picture of Kate Middleton's face, supposedly. Yep. Like how people see like Jesus in wood. I saw a jelly bean of Kate Middleton's face. It's getting excessive.
Big
it's
news.
Getting to the point.
It
where,
is. It is.
That was on the front. I was on CNN. That was the front. It was the front. It was the front, a jelly bean.
Today, apparently, Kate Middleton is not throwing her bouquet at the wedding.
See, we shouldn't know this.
I shouldn't know this. I'm so upset that you know this. Why do you know this?
I haven't been following it for the past 2 years.
Because it's probably on NPR because everybody is getting in on it. And, like, I think, you know, what you guys are saying, like, obviously jelly beans shouldn't be front page news.
Right.
But I do think that it should be aired. I think there's a certain excitement in, like, watching something like that. That's, like, worthwhile coverage. I mean, I'm not saying it has to be on every station. But, yeah, the over-the-top jelly beans, And I admit, like, I mean, I was really just joking about the Prince Harry thing. All right, half joking, fine. But,
Janine.
I will
take us out with this point, and it definitely deserves coverage. There's no doubt in my mind about that. It's a huge story. But, you know, to take from Derek's example, I saw a story on the news the other day, CNN, talking about a postage stamp that was made for Kate and William and Kate, and it was passed by the Queen, and it accidentally splits when you go to mail, so you split the couple up, and stuff like that, you know, especially for CNN, which is, you know, nonstop news coverage all day. That's a little blip I want to see on a blog or something on the side of a news page, something
or
the
crawler.
Right.
That would be a perfect spot.
Something on the Today Show, you know, okay, Kathy Lee and Hoda want to talk about that.
What are you pointing at me like I'm Hoda?
You would be. I would definitely be Kathy Lee.
Callie's definitely Kathy Lee.
Well, I'm not. Hoda's like super tall. Yeah.
So tonight we have with us, back with us, our videographer, Danielle Alio.
Hello,
which
everyone.
Is super exciting. And she
Very
looks gorgeous, as usual.
WB.
She's got the 411 here.
Back. I need to add like some commentary to this topic. So I was listening to the radio today, and I heard that President Obama and Michelle Obama are really, really, really upset they were not invited to this wedding.
That should be top priority for them. There's nothing else in the world going on right now.
Part of me has a feeling that as soon as the engagement notice went out, that Michelle Obama was already picking out the dress, picking out the buying the plane tickets, and they're not invited to
then
the wedding.
Then there would be coverage. What's Michelle Obama
wearing?
What's
she going to wear to the
wedding?
Wedding?
I can just see it all unfolding exactly. Before my eyes.
I just thought that was interesting because
that's terrible.
Why would you be upset about that?
It's. I mean, you know, that's what I mean. Some of it's just going a little too far. On to another note, though, a fun note. This is something I did find interesting and sort of worth coverage because it is, like Janine says, the Disney princess factor. Every little girl grows up, you know, thinking maybe someday they'll turn into,
or boy.
You know, Belle.
Or boy.
Or boy. That's right. John. I know you have the
Don't
thing
be
for
sexist
Sleeping
over there.
Beauty.
Derek, too.
What happens when you go from a commoner to a princess? What are the changes that are going to happen in her life? Okay, I think that's worth a little bit of coverage. It's interesting. And just to discuss, her name will be changed from Kate to Catherine because Kate isn't royal enough. I mean, that's sort of common.
Wow,
that's
I didn't know that.
If
wow.
you ask me. No. She won't be allowed to eat shellfish anymore. The royals are not allowed to eat shellfish for fear of poisoning. This dates back to years before.
Oh my God.
She will not be allowed to play Monopoly.
What?
This game was outlawed a while back by a duke. No Monopoly. I mentioned this to somebody and they said, oh, is that because it implies capitalism? So, yeah, no Monopoly. And the worst one, at least from my point of view, is she will not be able to finish a meal unless she is a fast eater. Because when the queen stops eating, everybody has to stop eating.
What?
Yeah.
What? Mm-hmm. Doesn't That's she so just like chew stuff and like drink it through a straw?
Yeah, right now.
I mean, wow. She's got to be, the queen's got to be like 186
years old. I mean, when the queen's on a slim fast diet, you're on a slim fast
Today's
diet.
Today's her birthday, the queen's birthday.
How old is she?
85.
Good
85.
God.
185.
Everybody gets a crumb of birthday
cake. That was on the news.
Cake.
She was at Westminster Abbey giving out 85 gifts to 85 men and 85 women. Apparently, it's a tradition that dates back like, many years.
God. See, she's 170. She gave away 170 gifts.
So the question is, how much birthday cake will Kate Middleton be able to eat
before
the night ends? All right, guys, I'm going to wrap it up on that note and keep your eyes and ears peeled for coverage. And be sure to let me know at cmccurdy@transitionsradio.com. Maybe an interesting blip of coverage that you think was or wasn't worth being covered.
Thanks, Callie, for that great coverage of the royal wedding. I'm sure we'll all be riveted towards it, and we'll be even more riveted towards what Janine, our executive producer, has to say in this week's installment of What's on Tap. Janine, take it away.
Hey, everyone. Here is what is going on this weekend and what's on tap. In music, previous Transitions guest Siamese Sundown will be performing at the Veterans of Foreign Wars, VFW, in Willow Grove, PA this Saturday, April 23rd, from 7 to 10 p.m. On TV, as we were talking about earlier, Art is imitating life on the appropriately named channel Lifetime with the film William and Kate, which will be airing again on Saturday, April 23rd and Sunday, April 24th at 9 p.m. If you would like more information on William and Kate the movie, please visit Lifetime.com. Want to see the real thing instead? So do I. And the last thing I want to talk about tonight is my personal movie pick for this past week, which was Scream 4. I got to see it on its opening night with our favorite intern, Alex Nelson. So,
intern.
Yeah, who we have a clap for. So I, you know, just from my opinion, and then Alex, you can just follow up with anything. I'm not really into gory horror films. My friends are, which is really weird, but I like romantic comedies and the princess movies, and they're like, let's go see Scream 4. So at first it was a little hard for me to get past the guts of the victims and the first gruesome deaths. But then it really does draw you in. I was really engrossed in trying to figure out who the killer was. And it was also cool to see two generations come together. You have Neve Campbell, Courtney Cox, and David Arquette from the first three Screams. And joined by the new cast, younger cast, Hayden Panettiere, Emma Roberts, Julia Roberts' niece, who did great, and Adam Brody. Any follow-up thoughts, Alex?
Well, I wouldn't necessarily call it a gory movie. It's not really gory. It's very suspenseful. It's not like Saw. Nobody gets their limbs chopped off. But it was definitely great, and I love the Scream movies. They're like my favorite movies that goes as, you know, horror movies. And I was really, you know, skeptical about it because I thought, how are they going to make another killer? The third movie, that was a stretch, if anybody saw that. It was good just because I love them, but it wasn't great. And so I was actually really surprised. I thought it was really great, and it definitely had many suspenseful moments, so it was definitely good.
Thank you, Alex. And I'm going to give this movie 4 stars, a big increase from last week with Sucker Punch. So that's going to do it for me. If you want more info on what's going on this weekend, please make sure to check out my blog on transitionsradio.com, What's on Tap. So that's going to do it. Have a happy Easter, everyone. Back to you, John and Callie.
Thank you, Janine. That was a great review, and maybe I'll check that out because I don't think I've seen any of the Scream movies, which I know. It should be a sin if you live in America. I've sinned.
Yeah, that's a sin. Repent. Easter's coming.
Yeah, Jesus Go is watch. Back this weekend. He comes back every year. He always does it.
It's like a birthday, but dead.
No, okay, this has always been a joke of mine. I'm a religious person. I really am, but it's always been a joke of mine with my friends since college. Jesus manages to come back every year. We make a joke out of it, like, oh, he did it again. So it's just a joke. I'm religious. Anyway, transitioning. I need to. Our big surprise for the night is that we have a brand new logo, which you can't see. Because we're on the radio. But you can see it if you go. Well, we are getting video of it. And this is it, not in color. Danielle Alio is recording this right now, which you'll be able to check out. We'll have online tomorrow. But it's our brand new logo, courtesy of Christina Mastro, who was actually a guest on the show previously. So thanks, Christina, for this awesome logo. And the word is that she doesn't even know yet that we picked it. So that's just awesome. I'll, of course, have it. We'll have it on Facebook. We'll have it on our website. And we'll have it on all of our blogs, YouTube. We'll have all those links out tomorrow. Be sure to check us out at www.transitionsradio.com.
Facebook.com/transitionsradio.
The Twitter at transitionsr. And Dan and Janine's blog on the website. And mine, www.thezish.blogspot.com.
And, of course, every Friday from 4 to 5 p.m. on WYBF 89.1 The Burn.
That's right. We want to give a big thanks to all of our guests tonight, and keep listening out there. Next week, we have on Maria Catherine, designer of coffee stains, talking with us about her spring line. That's going to do it for us tonight. I'm Callie McCurdy.
And I'm John Mim.
Thanks for listening to
Transitions.
Transit ions.
Transit ions.